Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. We start with the good. And, Jim, just yesterday we were talking about Mark Pryor's ad where he said he wasn't perfect but never explained what he had done wrong as senator. Mary Landry, just to the south of him in Louisiana, is also in a tough fight. She is taking a different tack on Obamacare. Rather than being vague about it, she's just doubling down on it. Here's what she had to say to WAFB-TV.
The Affordable Care Act, as I said, the bill itself has got very good concepts. And yes, I would support it again. But that doesn't excuse the poor rollout of what should have happened. There should have not been a glitch in the software.
Jim, talk about rolling the dice. If she thinks that the only problem is the website, this could be a very fun campaign in Louisiana next year.
To give credit where it's due, I understand the National Republican Senatorial Committee has sent her a fruit basket to say thank you for doubling down. Having said that, I'm going to echo Ala Pundit over at Hot Air, making the point that for a red state Democrat who voted for Obamacare, as the program continues to stumble and fumble and its way down the field, as Chris Berman would put it, they don't have a lot of good options. This may be the least bad option, because if, by November, it's still a disaster, people are losing their insurance, the website is still, if it still has all these problems, well, then she's toast anyway, right? And saying, right towards the end, well, actually, now I oppose it or something, people who don't like Obamacare are not going to vote for an incumbent senator who voted for it. So she's got to basically, roll the dice and say, this is it, I'm with it, and hope that it gets better. Because, trying to pose as a last-minute critic or something like that isn't going to do her much good. It's not going to be very plausible. I don't think anybody's going to – you're seeing a lot of Democrats now saying, well, we don't want to end it. We want to fix it. And, it'll be up to Republicans to make the argument, why would you trust the people who loused it up so badly to fix it? You need new repairmen. It's a contractor who you signed to do home repair who has just blown up your kitchen, and now they're saying they want to fix it. And, unsurprisingly, people will be skeptical of it. I think her approach, as much as the Republicans will be doing cartwheels over this, makes a certain amount of sense for her. Having said that, boy, it sure does make things easier for Republicans, doesn't it?
I think Bill Cassidy and some of these other Republicans in the big jungle primary in Louisiana are going to be more than happy to take that footage and put it right into a political ad. My question is that since she, of course, led the effort in reaction to the failed promise of if you like your plan, you can keep it, to trying to help people keep their plans with a Senate bill that Harry Reid wouldn't let advance, could she plausibly pull off the argument that I believed the promise too? That's how I interpreted the bill when I read it, quote unquote, probably, even though she probably didn't.
Yeah. Don't vote me out. I'm gullible. It's not my fault. I believe the promises too. Republicans can point out we were warning from the beginning. You can't keep anyway. So, yeah, she can try it. And then basically has to say, don't judge me by my results. Judge me by my good intentions. Mm. And maybe, you can dink and dunk your way to about 51% that way. It's not a great option, but, she doesn't have any good options in front of her.
All right. On to martini number two now. And apparently Bill Cassidy also needs to head over to John Boehner's office for a tutorial, because Politico was reporting on Thursday that the National Republican Congressional Committee is actively holding kind of briefing sessions for Republican incumbents and Republican candidates this year, particularly if they're going up against a Democratic woman, about how to couch their message. Here's how John Boehner explained it yesterday.
Oh, I'm trying to get them to be a little more sensitive. You look around the Congress, there are a lot more females in the Democrat Caucus than there are in the Republican Caucus. And, some of our members just aren't as sensitive as they ought to be.
Jim, wouldn't it be easier to just try and recruit people who are able to talk to people that are not exactly like them?
Yeah, and you look at this and you can't help but figure that this is a little bit of the Pauline Kael effect on the Republican side, which is that if you don't spend time outside your bubble, if you're a conservative Republican and you don't spend time with people who aren't conservative Republicans, you will forget how people outside your bubble think. There are different arguments you make with somebody who disagrees with you, different arguments you make with somebody who's not as familiar with an issue before you as you are. When you're in front of your base, you can toss red meat. You can relentlessly attack and mock the other side and stuff like that. this is not the worst idea for a program in the first place, but I think it basically comes down to a certain level of empathy and sensitivity and just thoughtfulness in their articulation of their message and their arguments and how they do these things. The aim is, I guess, to de-Todd Akinize the Republicans who are running for Congress this year. And it's a shame that it's even necessary because Todd Akin was a clod. And you'd like to think that the vast majority of Republicans running for office this year are not going to be clods. But maybe it's better to try to inoculate yourself. If they have to say to you things like, you know, don't bring up rape. It's a sad state of affairs, but I guess I should be glad that they're addressing it and they're not just, you know, crossing their fingers and hoping for the best heading into the midterm elections.
Yeah, it just strikes me as a junior high program. Do you know how to talk to girls?
But in some cases, maybe not, Greg.
I guess not. One girl out in Colorado that has some moxie, as we shift to our crazy martini, is Patty Fontenot. She is the president and CEO of Connect for Health Colorado, and she is asking for a raise. Even though the website has enrolled fewer than half the people who are supposed to purchase health insurance through December, she already earns over $190,000 a year. Taxpayers, of course, pay that salary. She got a $5,000 raise last year, is eligible for bonuses. This request has not yet been approved or rejected. I don't see that the exchange site has had a bunch of technical problems, but still, when you don't meet targets, Jim, I'm guessing raises aren't usually the first response.
Greg, what's that salary again?
$190,549.
Do you feel a little underpaid right now?
Yes.
I mean, you know, what's really, you know, I don't know what the target audience of Radio America is. I don't know what the target listenership of this podcast is, but can't be that high, right? And here we are, and our podcast goes out every day, and I don't know how you're doing, but I'm doing significantly worse than $190,000 a year. So I guess you have to admire her gumption, you know, but $190,000 seems like an extraordinary amount of money for somebody who is you know, allegedly working in, I mean, this is where you get into that private-public partnership category. So you have this entity that isn't quite a government job, but isn't quite, you know, when you say your title is CEO, right? I'm not sure if, like, if you're, you know, there should be chief executive officers in a government institution, right? I mean, you usually think of that as a corporate role. It certainly isn't working with corporate efficiency or private sector efficiency, or as they, you know, they'd said over this weekend, they said, well, we're starting to approach private sector performance over at healthcare.gov. So my short, I think this should be a really short answer to this woman. I don't know if the state of Colorado will respond with a two-page fax, but I think the first page would be N, and you can guess what the second page says.
Oh?
Yes, there you go. Yeah.
Well, Jim, looking at the numbers here, earlier this week, exchange officials reported that 9,980 people have purchased private health plans so far. The projected enrollment numbers for this month, even on the low end, were 22,215. Projections were 61,000 would have purchased health insurance by the end of December. I'm pretty sure we've got more podcast listens than that.
Yeah, we may very – actually, you know what? We do. I'm pretty darn sure that we do. And certainly, you know, web traffic is much higher than that at probably both the National Review and Radio America. So admittedly, they could say, oh, but it's much harder to get people to sign up. And you know, look, saying our website is better than the federal one really isn't the highest bar to clear, right? So I don't think you get any bonuses for that one. That's kind of minimum performance there. So anyway, so the short answer is no. I don't think anybody working with this program deserves any bonuses this year. And oh, by the way, you know, even though we had a fairly decent jobs number and a fairly decent GDP number, I don't think most Americans feel like the economy's roaring and it's, you know, happy days are here again. So no, sorry, Obamacare administrator in Colorado. No bonus for you this year.
No bonus. Maybe a subscription to the Jelly of the Month Club to steal one from Christmas vacation.
That'll give her.
Six months.
Boysenberry's too good for her.
On that note, Jim, have a great weekend. We'll actually talk to you on Wednesday.
Yep, see you Wednesday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please come back on Monday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Have a great weekend, everyone.